For his day, John created quite a puzzle, folks. He looked quite a ruckus. There was a lot of attention that was drawn to what he was saying. I think John must have been more than just a moderately popular, itinerant preacher floating around. He was attracting a lot of attention, so much so that the priests and the Levites and the Pharisees all sent representatives out. By the way, you know, the priests and the Levites and the Pharisees hated each other. They didn't do anything together. But they all sent representatives out to figure out what was going on with this John the Baptist fellow. What was he up to? And what was causing all this furor among the people that went out to see him? You see, I think they saw more than just somebody coming back and saying, that was nice. You know, had a nice little time out in the wilderness. It was fun to go hear John. He's a pretty decent preacher. No, there was something different, I think, about these folks that came back. There was some change that had taken place. This was more than just going out and having a dunk in the river. This was more than going and hearing a nice sermon. They came back different. And that is what was leading more and more people to go, to want to see what was happening. And that's what was beginning to cause concern among the religious leaders of the day. Is this some heresy? Is this some false teaching? Is this something that we need to be careful to defend the people against? Some were probably coming back saying that this must be the Messiah, or saying that he was a great prophet, or perhaps Elijah, who it was believed would one day return in the flesh, as he had not died in the conventional sense of the word. And so they sent him out. And John, the gospel writer, by the way, you know that's two different John. John, the gospel writer, and John the Baptist are two different people. John, the gospel writer, wants us to understand a couple of things very clearly. First, John was very clear about his role. He understood how he fit into the scheme of things. When they asked, "Are you the Messiah?" he said, "No." "Are you the prophet?" "No." "Are you Elijah?" "No." "Well, what are you then?" And so the title he chose for himself, the identity under which he saw himself operating, was taken, as we heard last Sunday, from Isaiah chapter 40. "I am the voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord." And notice that it's just a voice. The carrier of the voice is insignificant. John knew that he wasn't the important one, that it was the one coming after him that mattered. That's the one that counted. And John devoted himself fully to the purpose of being that voice in the wilderness. He lived in the wilderness. He wore a coat of camel's hair. And by the way, that means rough and scratchy. Nobody wanted to wear. Have you ever met a camel? They're not nice and furry like a golden retriever or a nice pussycat. They have very coarse, rough hair. It would be scratchy and uncomfortable. And he ate locusts and wild honey. So he ate bugs, and then he had to fight bees to get his food out of the wilderness. John didn't have it easy. He didn't want to have it easy. But yet, people came out to hear this strange man because there was something happening there. People were being changed. They were coming home different than they were when they left. And there is something undeniably compelling about that. Well, I want to pose a question to you. Do we want St. John's to be that kind of a place? A place that is compelling because people's lives are different. Not because we're anything special, but because we, like proclaim the one who comes to us. And as long as we can keep clear what we're doing is pointing to that one, then we can be that voice. And we can begin to see the people coming and being changed. And then allowing that change to be seen as they go back home to their families and friends and neighbors and coworkers and schools, wherever it might be. You see, that changes how we think of ourselves as a church. Because remember, the people didn't go out to see John because of a warm fellowship. Churches, including St. John's, always love to talk about their warm fellowship. And I'm glad we have a warm fellowship, don't get me wrong. But that's not what drew the people out to see John. Not at all. They didn't come out to see John because he had a big, beautiful building. In fact, he had no building at all. If you went out to see John in the wilderness, you were sleeping under the stars with your head on a rock if you were lucky enough to find a rock. They went out to see this guy who didn't look like anybody else they knew. He didn't dress like the people that they knew. He didn't talk like the people they knew. He didn't behave like the people they knew. He didn't fit the mold. But yet there was something compelling that was going on. I personally think if John were to come today, he'd probably ride a big red motorcycle. And the message, the change that was happening in people's lives was compelling. And that's what drew people out. And that's why the crowds got bigger. Now, I'm sure eventually they started to get people just coming because they were curious. You know, the onlookers, the curiosity seekers, the ones who just kind of want to be in on whatever the happening thing is around town. But what got this cranking was people coming into contact with the living God in the words of John the Baptist. Are we prepared to be that kind of a church? A church that doesn't worry about taking credit for the other things. Our warm fellowship, our lovely buildings. Let me tell you, there's plenty of warm fellowship out there. There's other churches that have warm fellowship. There are groups of people that aren't even religious that have a nice warm fellowship. There are plenty of places that have lovely buildings. This is a beautiful building, but there's others. There's lovelier buildings out there. None of those things are what is at the heart of what makes St. John's a special place and can make it an even more special place moving into the future. It is our willingness to allow ourselves to be changed by an encounter with the living God and then to let others around us see that. To let them see that change and be drawn not to us, not because we're something special, but be drawn to the one who has changed us. And we need to be clear, just like John was clear. We are not the Messiah, we are not the prophet, we are not the ones with the answers. We just are a voice in the wilderness, and we point to the one who is the Messiah, to the one who is the prophet, to the one who has the answer, to the one who can reach into our lives and change what needs to be changed, that we may be his people. That's the kind of church I actually think we all really, at the core, want to be a part of. Not just a church that shows up and smiles at each other and so forth, but a church where we are changed to become more and more like Christ, both individually and as a body. It's that kind of a church that is a beacon to a suffering and hurting world. It's that kind of a church that has a compelling power to draw others in, that they may find that same Savior, that same Messiah, and find themselves changed as well. But it begins with each one of us, allowing ourselves to be changed by God, to be reshaped by Him, and then letting others see that change, that they may be drawn also.